Good afternoon. It's 2 o'clock, and you are tuned to KTWO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon, an early edition today, because at 3 o'clock we're going live to Washington D.C. to hear President Obama's address to Congress and the nation. Today on a Juneau afternoon, we'll be talking to M.K. McNine about classes this month at the campus. Ricky Anolino and Terry Tippett will be here to highlight tomorrow's FASD Awareness Day. We'll learn how to plan for disasters as a community with guests Michelle Brown and Irene Gallion. And Nancy Duturney will be here with news and views about local activities during Arts Up. That's today on a Juneau afternoon, again followed at 3 o'clock by live coverage of President Obama's address to the nation. Weather forecast for tonight, rain, low temperatures around 51 degrees. Forecast for Friday, rain with high temperatures around 59 degrees. Forecast for Saturday looks like mostly cloudy skies with a chance of rain, and sunny weather predicted for Sunday.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A federal agency is withholding funding from the Cherokee Nation because of a dispute over tribal citizenship. As KGOU's Kurt Gortney reports, one member of Congress says the Oklahoma tribe should get the money it deserves until the matter is settled in the courts.
The Cherokee Nation's acting principal chief says the Department of Housing and Urban Development is temporarily suspending disbursements to the tribe until it can review a funding statute involving descendants of former slaves owned by tribal members. Last month, the Supreme Court of the Cherokee Nation terminated citizenship for about 2,800 descendants called freedmen when it reinstated a constitutional amendment that requires citizens to have a Cherokee ancestor listed on the Dawes roll. Oklahoma 4th District Congressman Tom Cole disagrees with the federal agency's action.
The federal government should not be hurting individual Cherokees while a legal process is underway. Frankly, I don't think they should be doing it ever. I'd be just as outraged if the federal government was withholding money from the state of Oklahoma because they didn't like something that the state legislature had done or the people at Oklahoma had decided.
Cole is the only Native American in the U.S. House. He says the tribe should continue to receive the federal money while a case concerning the rights of the freedmen continues to work its way through the federal court system. Acting Chief Joe Crittenden says the tribe has enough funding to last a few months without affecting HUD-related services. For National Native News, I'm Kurt Gortney.
The chief-elect of the Mississippi Band of Choctaw Indians says she'll focus on financial stability. According to the Associated Press, Phyllis Anderson says that will be one of her top goals when she takes office next month. She comes into office as the tribe's casino resort is under scrutiny, including an FBI investigation this summer. Anderson will be the first woman chief of the tribe. She unseated incumbent chief Beasley Denson in an election this week. It was the second election for chief. Previous election results were tossed out amid complaints about voting irregularities. Denson was elected in 2007 after defeating longtime chief Philip Martin, who passed away last year. More than $6 million in federal awards are addressing children's mental health in American Indian communities. The Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration announced grants today. The funding is for communities to plan and design a holistic, community-based system of care to support mental health and wellness for children, youth, and families. 7 3-year grants were awarded to communities in California, Montana, Oregon, Arizona, and Ohio. Chiefs in Manitoba, Canada are concerned about education of children displaced from flooded communities. The Assembly of Manitoba Chiefs say First Nations children have a right to a safe and quality educational environment. According to the Assembly, it may be several weeks before children from the community of Lake St. Martin are able to return to school. In addition, those children were not able to complete their education last school year due to flooding. Lake St. Martin Chief Adrian Sinclair has requested support from the Assembly of Manitoba Chiefs as the First Nation implements an emergency response. Leaders say the children have suffered trauma in the last few months by leaving their homes, community, and school. Leaders are calling on the federal government to work with them to ensure their children are able to return to a safe and supportive school environment as soon as possible. Spring flood waters spread across the province, with First Nations leaders saying their people once again bore the brunt of spring flooding. This spring, National Chief Sean Atleo of the Assembly of First Nations called on the federal government for long-term solutions, saying flooding is a chronic problem on reserve communities and is making poor living conditions even worse. On this day in 2010, Marine Sergeant Alan Dell June passed away. He was one of the original 29 Navajo code talkers. they developed an unbreakable code in the Navajo language used during World War II. June died of natural causes in a veterans home in Prescott, Arizona. He was 91 years old. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. With funding by the Washington, D.C., Albuquerque, and Alaska law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Anderson, Miller, and Munson. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Time is 2:05, and you are tuned in to KTUO News on a June afternoon. It's a little bit early this today because President Barack Obama is going to be addressing the nation at 3 o'clock. So we're bringing to you a June afternoon just a little bit earlier today. In the studio with me now is M.K. McNaughton from the Canvas Community Arts Studio, here to talk about classes coming up this September. M.K., thank you very much for being on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you for coming early.
My pleasure.
So, like my usual question when I have you as a guest, what's going on?
What's going on? We are launching into paper, clay, and glass this month, the three mediums that we have a bunch of classes starting in the next week and a half. We have stained glass for the first time at the Canvas. I'm very excited about that. We've offered some glass classes before with Tasha Whalen doing fused glass, but now we have Joel Abbott joining our teaching staff, and he with Tasha will teach a six-week stained glass class. So we have invested in new equipment that we need for this medium, and the big order arrived this week. Heavy. The glass is heavy. Think of a delicate window seeming like kind of ethereal and light, but the order itself was heavy, meaty.
All that lead and solder.
Yeah, and all that glass. Yeah. So we have beautiful supplies ready to go and a class starting this Sunday. It's a six-week class, and students will complete a 18 by 18-inch copper-foiled stained glass panel in that class, so you'll walk away with a finished 18 by 18 inch window. And Tasha and Joel will both be teaching the first class. Joel will be continuing with Tasha's assistance whenever, depending on how many people sign up for the class. If we need to pull in extra teacher, we will. I'm excited about that. And then we have Sherry McDonald coming to offer some paper making. She's offering a series of 4 months of classes. And one of the really fun things about my job is working with artists who are passionate about what they do. And Sherry is passionate about paper. So when I'm with her, I appreciate paper in ways that I don't usually, honestly, notice them. She is going to offer a workshop this weekend that's a free workshop. We just want people to come learn to make paper and make a paper stock for our studio. So if there's a piece you really love, you can take it with you. But mostly it's a chance to come for free, learn techniques, learn how to make paper thin or textured paper out of recycled materials, learn a variety of papermaking techniques, and also just learn to appreciate paper through Sherry McDonald's eyes. And then she's going to start teaching papermaking with collage class on Thursday nights starting next week, starting on the 15th. So if anyone's familiar with Sherry McDonald's work, she makes beautiful collages out of paper, and much of the paper that she uses is handmade paper. So she will be launching into that this month.
She has work at Anna Kale's, I believe.
She does, and also at the Remino Gallery,
okay.
Sherry McDonald, and a wonderful, wonderful Facebook page, too, with examples of her work, if you want to look her up on Facebook, too, Sherry McDonald. And then we also have pottery classes. We have ongoing classes for kids. There are a couple spots left in a class that starts this Saturday, a kids' wheel-throwing class. We also have classes for adults, both beginning and intermediate advanced classes. So if you want to learn how to use the wheel and you never have, or you want to learn how to throw lidded pottery, if you have some basic skills and you want to move to the next level, or you want to practice hand building, all of those classes are starting this weekend on Sunday. And Kids' classes actually start Saturday. So we welcome phone calls if people have questions at 586-1750. And we also are on the web, canvasarts.org.
All right, M. Kim McNally, you always got a lot of stuff going on. Welcome to your new director.
Thank you. She's wonderful.
Love her on the show in the next few weeks, I'm sure.
Great.
Thank you for coming by. Anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
I will just add one last plug that we have a lot of movement classes. If people are interested, they can check out our website. We have capoeira, which is a Brazilian martial art. Kind of looks like dance to me, like choreographed dance. A capoeira on Monday nights, swing dance on Tuesday nights, and Erica Lee is teaching kind of a Zumba class. It's also what she calls booty aerobics on Wednesdays, and the energy travels at least 3 blocks any direction of the canvas. You can just feel it when you walk by the studio and Erica's in there teaching. So those classes are all ongoing Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday nights as well.
And Kim McNaughton, thank you for coming down the station today and talking about things that are going on in the Canvas Community Art Studio. Adams with a Z. Time is 2:13. You are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Tomorrow is FASD Awareness Day, September 9th. And with me in the studio is Rick Andolino and also Terry Tibbett to talk about it. Rick and Terry, thank you very much for coming down the station today.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thanks, Jeff.
So for people who do not know, Rick, what is FASD?
It means fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. Most people know about fetal alcohol syndrome. That's part of a spectrum, a range of brain damage. And people hear FAS. FAS means that mom drank between 18th and 24th day, and there are specific syndrome and the symptoms of syndrome. The indication of syndrome is small eye openings, a smooth philtrum, and a smooth upper lip. Those are actually the syndrome. But if mom drank only the first trimester, which is the first 3 months, but she didn't drink the rest of the 6 months, that still would be. But if she didn't drink the first 3 months, but she drank the next 6 months, they wouldn't have those features, but a lot of brain damage. So the features themselves don't really mean it's severe, but probably 90% of the people have no facial features, and many people have very severe damage.
When was the first described and diagnosed?
It was first described probably by Socrates when he saw people with strange smiles and babies who were very simple, he said, were strange smiles. And the London gin, another one, there was many, many times, but the London gin epidemics in the 1600s, water wasn't safe in London, and poor women, poor people in general, had to drink gin. And they had a huge amount of, the doctors noticed, the physicians in particular noticed that there was something wrong with the infants. And so, but it was actually diagnosed and in 1973, by Dr. Lyon in France, and then it was actually in 73, Dr. Jones and Smith termed it FAS, but it actually was found by Christy Yulin, a female physician who actually found five babies who looked the same, and the one thing, they were different races. It was in Seattle. She wanted to know more about these babies because she thinks she found another syndrome. And indeed, she did, and she found all five mothers were homeless and chronic inebriants.
How common is it?
It's very common. It's much more common than autism. It's much more common than spinal bifida. It's probably, of all the brain differences, it's the most common. It causes a tremendous amount of damage. And we don't know exactly the exact numbers, but we know that we're probably the highest in the nation. Part of that is we have a very heavy culture and society in Alaska that drinks a lot. But the other half is we have something called surveillance, which we keep track of who we see and the rates that we do know. So we have a little higher than most states on that basis as well.
It's easier to say that it's preventable, but how easily is that actually accomplished?
It's not easy to prevent it at all. You hear the simplistic little jingles, you know, all you have to, 100% preventable. Well, that's true. Of course that's true. Hunger is also preventable if you eat, but if you don't have food, and in this case you don't have support services, you don't have treatment, you don't have a lot of people, don't have houses, they don't have food, they're scared of losing their children, they don't have the kind of support that they need in order to not drink. So that's really the biggest issues, is that our society really is not welcoming to many people who, what they really do is they're taking drugs to self-medicate from other kinds of stress and pain in their lives. And of course, as our economics plummet and more homelessness, you're going to see more people medicating, and alcohol is the cheapest. Remember, the cheapest kind of medication you can find if you need something to take your pain away.
Speaking of cheap, what does it cost in financial terms, and also what does it cost to our society?
It is phenomenal. I think the current estimate for a lifetime cost for one person with FAS is about $5 million. And that is not just medical. That's from birth to death. That includes all the complicated medical practices. Many times children are taken away. And so there's all the foster care, the probation, social workers, police, juvenile justice, jail, just the tremendous, all the damage that goes on and the loss of productivity goes on and on and on. So it's quite large. It's quite large.
Would you say that prohibition kind of activities are the solution?
Say it one more time.
Is prohibition the solution?
Prohibition. No, I don't think that's going to work at all, because, you know, people who drink heavily like that are in pain. They're self-medicating. Most of society can drink and then something happens to them. They're not self-medicating. Part of it is that people who, babies who are born under great stress, many times they have brain differences. And one of the brain differences that we see, whether mom drank or there's violence around or war or neglect, whatever, is that certain structures of the brain are not developed. And some of those structures produce something like dopamine and serotonin. They're chemicals that affect how we feel. And if you don't have structures that can monitor that, dopamine comes from the word dope. It means to calm, right? To calm down. And people use drugs and alcohol many times. People who don't have had a stable upbringing many times, that's part of it. Is they're trying to get back to what most of us would call, you know, normal. But they're taking drugs that are, you know, so many times more powerful than any normal happy experience in our lives. That normal, they don't know what normal is, and so it's a very complicated. You're asking a complicated question.
Is there any way to estimate the number of people who are incarcerated with FASD?
The estimates from Canada and the United States, and again, we don't know the number because most children and most adults have never been diagnosed, so we have no idea at all. But we think between people who really have raised many children and adults with FASD suspect 40 to 50% or higher of people incarcerated, juvenile justice, and places such as the shelters, the Glory Hole in Juneau, we're thinking 40, 50% of the people were prenatally exposed to alcohol.
What kind of treatment is available for people with FASD?
Well, treatment per se, there's no treatment because brain damage is permanent. You can think of Alzheimer's, you know, people, all those jokes about people with Alzheimer's. Well, those same kind of experience that we are very tolerant of older people and people with traumatic brain injury, TBI, we're very tolerant of people understanding that. But people who were born with the same kind of damage and face the same kind of struggles and problems with memory losses and lack of consequences and so on, we judge very harshly because we don't know they have it. And so there's no treatment. What we can do is provide some decent housing, food, and mostly case management, somebody to really remind the people. Think of Alzheimer. People sometimes, you know, 20 minutes later are saying, what did you say? 5 minutes later, what did you say? Well, some of our clients have the same issue. It might be minutes, it might be hours, it might be days, or it might be a week of it, where there's no memory at all. They can't remember any of it. So we need somebody to remind people. Just if you think Alzheimer and people caring for older people, you can understand what needs to be done with people with FASD, the same things.
I'm talking with Rick Catalano and Terry Tippett about FASD Awareness Day, which is tomorrow, September 9th. How is it being observed here in Juneau and perhaps across the country?
Well, in Juneau, we are there's a couple of things going on. The Ethel Lund Medical Center is hosting an information display table booth. They're going to be that'll be out at Search at Ethel Lund, like I said, the Ethel Lund Medical Center, and also citywide, we're having a promotion partnering with the Alaska FASD Partnership and the Juneau Partnerships for Families and Children, and in they're partnering. Those two entities are also partnering with the National Council on Alcoholism and Drug Dependence here in Juneau, and all putting the effort to spread the word about FASD in restaurants, restaurants citywide. So there'll be table tents on a bunch of participating restaurants. There's about 15 restaurants that have said they'd do this. So they hang posters about what is FASD and giving numbers to call if you have questions about FASD. But on the tables in the restaurants, there'll be table tents that invite every single pregnant woman to have a free non-alcoholic beverage at that restaurant. So all day tomorrow, it's free non-alcoholic beverages for pregnant women all over Juneau. And you just find the restaurant that's participating that has the table tents, and then while you're sitting there, you can look on the other side and read a little bit about FASD. So that's happening. Those two things that I know of for FASD Awareness Day. That's tomorrow, by the way, September 9th, representing the ninth day. I'm sorry, the ninth month, you know, 9 months of pregnancy. So September 9th every year is FASD Awareness Day. So that's why that restaurant promotion is happening, and that's why that information table is happening at Search, and that's why Rick and I are on the radio today to talk about FASD Awareness Day.
If people need more information or want to help somehow, is there a website they can go to or a phone number you want to direct them to?
We have parents who want to help parents in parent navigation, I can tell you with a clinic, is that our number is 463-7373.
And if you want to know more, we have some information on the website of the Alaska FASD Partnership. And I think the best thing to do is to call this number, and because it's too long of a web address to give over the air. But it's just called 465-4765, and that's my number, and I'd be glad to direct anybody to the website if they want to know more about FASD.
All right, Rick Catalano and Terry Tippett, is there anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
How did it start? How did FAS awareness, and how it's called international? It's called international. It's all over the world now. It started with two people in Ontario, Canada, one person in Tucson, and that was Bunny Buxton and Brian Philcox. They're married. We had a child with an FAS they adopted. And then in Teresa Kellerman in Arizona, USA in Arizona, had a child, and they came together and decided they wanted to informed their communities, and they said, communities, the whole world. And they started this process. And I work currently with the clinic and go to the international conferences, FAS conferences biannually. And
can you tell just a bit about your clinic?
But we have, anyway, we meet with people from Australia, New Zealand, England, and mostly Canada. But there's people from Germany and Russia, all over, people, Africa, South America, Central America, Asia. There's people all over the world struggling. This is not a unique problem. The highest levels in South Africa and Russia has very high, and many countries. Italy has very high because of the societal drinking, you know. So about the clinic, we have about 18 members total of the clinic here in Juneau. They're all volunteers or in-kind, provided in-kind through agencies. We have neurologists, two pediatricians, a psychiatrist, three psychologists. One's a neuropsychologist, one's a PhD counseling, and one's a school psychologist. We have three speech and language pathologists, physical therapist, occupational therapist, parent navigators, Sandy Fiscus, and myself as coordinator, and I do parent navigation for older people as well.
And all those people are volunteers.
They're all volunteers. I'm the only non-volunteer.
They don't have a ton of funding for this.
We have very, very limited funding, not sufficient funding, but there's just enough funding to keep a clinic barely running, but not enough to really keep it without contributions from a lead agency such as, and this is Clinton Heights Central Council. These are lead agencies, and we have to contribute quite a bit to keep the clinic open.
And it's the Juneau FASD Diagnostic Clinic is where you work.
And I work for Clinic at Haida, and I work for the Juneau, and coordinate the Juneau FASD Diagnostic Clinic.
Phone numbers one more time, please.
463-7373.
That's the number of the clinic. And the number of the FASD partnership is 465-4765. And partnership is just an organization of statewide entities that want to, and individuals who want to have something to do with them, who want to participate in events and stuff related to FASD.
Rick and Terry, thank you for coming by.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday, the 8th of September, 2011. It was on this day in 1504 that Michelangelo unveiled his sculpture, David. The project had been around for a while. It started with a block of marble more than 19 feet high. A sculptor named Duccio had a hand in it, tried to do the feet and the legs, and then another sculptor, Rossellino, tried and also gave up. The marble sat in a courtyard for a while. And then the church settled on awarding the commission to 26-year-old Michelangelo Buonarroti Simon, who was undaunted by it, even though the chunk of marble had the mistakes of the two previous sculptors already carved into it. Started sculpting in the fall of 1501, finished less than 2 years later. Statue was then 17 feet tall, weighed several tons, and it was moved by a complicated system of beams from which it was suspended. It was moved by more than 40 men to where it stands today in the Palazzo della Signoria, and unveiled on this day in 1504. It was on this day, 1952, Ernest Hemingway published The Old Man and the Sea. He'd been living in Cuba, working on an epic novel, couldn't quite get it right, decided to publish a small piece of it, just 27,000 words, came out at the end of August in Life magazine, and in September published by Scribner. It was a comeback for Hemingway. His last major work had been For Whom the Bell Tolls 12 years earlier. His book Across the River and Into the Trees, published in 1950, was panned by all the critics who reviewed it. But The Old Man and the Sea changed all of that. Life magazine sold 5 million copies in 2 days, and it was a bestseller in book form, in which he wrote, "The shark swung over, and the old man saw his eye was not alive, and then he swung over once again, wrapping himself in two loops of the rope. The old man knew that he was dead, but the shark would not accept it. Then, on his back, with his tail lashing and his jaws clicking. The shark plowed over the water as a speedboat does. The water was white where his tail beat it, and three-quarters of his body was clear above the water when the rope came taut, shivered, and then snapped. The shark lay quietly for a little while on the surface, and the old man watched him. Then he went down, very slowly. A passage in which the old fisherman says, "Man is not made for defeat. A man can be destroyed, but not defeated." Here's a poem for today by Sam Hamill, "The Orchid Flower." Just as I wonder whether it's going to die, the orchid blossoms, and I can't explain why it moves my heart, why such pleasure comes from one small bud on a long spindly stem, one blood-red gold flower opening at midsummer, tiny, perfect in its hour. Even to a white-haired, craggy poet, it's purely erotic, pistil and stamen, pollen, dew of the world, a spoonful of earth and water. Erotic because there's death at the heart of birth, drama in those old sunrise prisms in wet cedar boughs, deepest mystery in washing evening dishes or teasing my wife, who grows, yes, more beautiful because one of us will die. The Orchid Flower by Sam Hamill from Almost Paradise, published by Shambhala Publications and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine. You can read the current issue of Poetry or listen to the monthly editor's podcast at poetryfoundation.org. Produced by Kathy Roach and Nick Vetter. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Time is 2:32 and you are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau, coming at you a little bit early on a Juneau afternoon because at 3 o'clock we're going to be going live to Washington, D.C. for a live broadcast of President Obama's address to the Congress and the entire nation. In the studio with me now we have Michelle Brown and Irene Gallien. They're here to talk about an event that's coming up this Saturday, Working Together in Disaster, Community Partnerships and All Hazards, Planning and Training for Disaster Preparedness. It's happening at the Bitternoff Hotel in the Treadwell Room this Saturday from 9 o'clock until 4. With the registration and continental breakfast starting at 8 o'clock and going until 9. Michelle and Irene, thank you for coming down to the station today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
There's a mouthful of words there. What does it all mean?
Well, it means that we, as this is Emergency Preparedness Month, and we are encouraging the community, individuals in the community, to get themselves prepared in case their first responders are busy elsewhere when the emergency happens so that they can take care of their own needs for the first little while of an emergency.
What kind of disaster are we talking about?
We could be talking about anything from, it could be a natural disaster like an avalanche or a tornado or a hurricane. It could be a man-made disaster such as a chemical spill, or it could be a terrorist act.
Now, this is the second time this is happening. What happened during the first one?
It was an incredible event, and the public loved it so much, and we heard comments like, there's always a lot of training out there for first responders and for people always involved in that kind of thing, but there's very little out there for the community, for the individuals in the community, and that they so appreciated the event, and it's a event that comes to us from the National Sheriff's Association. They're the presenters and the people that had been awarded the grant that pays for them to come. They bring it all over the United States, and it's just a very well-done event that keeps people engaged and having a really good learning experience that they can put into place.
Who do you say it's for?
It's for everybody. It's for people who don't generally respond to emergencies. If you're somebody who doesn't think it's fun to get a call at 3 o'clock in the morning and then just go pull some poor guy off a mountain who's broken his leg, this training's for you. We're not going to ask you to do that. We're going to give you the basic tools to be prepared so that when emergency crews are wrapped up in a big event, that you can take care of you and yours until help does arrive. And that can be anywhere from a couple of hours to, in larger events, over a week.
What kind of topics are covered, and what will people learn?
Well, another group that will be interested in attending are also our small business owners, because even small disasters can put them out of business sometimes. And so to learn to work together in a disaster means exactly that, is pooling your resources, because you don't know when or where this might strike. And the things that you're going to learn will help you in the now immediacy of a disaster to everyone, but there'll also be tools that would help you get through a job loss or a disease or something that would affect your family or your income. And being prepared for a disaster also can be personally prepared to help alleviate the stress and tension that would happen that way too.
Do you think the community is ready for a disaster now?
On many levels, they're more well-prepared, and they just really know how to pull together. And on other levels, there's some real weaknesses there, and I think that this is one of them that can be addressed in a real positive way to get everybody in a better position.
You know, President Obama tonight is probably going to talk about the fiscal realities of the United States. And we're used to having this idea that the government's going to come in and help us if there's a disaster. Well, as we start looking at funding, everything's going to be looked at. It's going to be more important than ever that people take individual responsibility for what they can and prepare as best they can.
You have a limit of 75 people?
Yes, we do have a limit of 75 people. And actually, at this point, we have reached that limit. We have enough signed up to fill that, because we have in the past had cancellations during the last week where people find something happens and they can't come. So I have a backup list that's people that will be on standby, ready to come if someone else's seat becomes available.
So now that you have the attention of all these people who can't go, what kind of things should they be aware of as far as disaster planning right now?
Well, it would be my hope that all of the attendees, because we have a very, very diverse group coming to this training, and I would hope that the attendees will take the materials that they'll be receiving back to their works and their families and their friends, and also be able to spread the word that way as well. And now you'll have to tell me the rest of the question.
Well, and I think I can jump in here. For those folks who can't attend, the Department of Homeland Security has a great website, ready.gov. Easy to go to, easy to find. And it's going to go over three major parts. One is putting together a disaster kit for you and your family. And the other is planning on how each one of you will respond if you're either together as a group or if you're separated for some reason. And then resources on how to stay informed about disasters that could happen in your area and resources that are available. So ready.gov is a ready resource for anybody who might want to put together their kit and is not able to attend this training.
And also, ready.gov has templates so that you can put, as you put together your plan, you can just fill in the blanks. It makes it easy, and it gives you a good guide so that you know what to do.
My stepson called last night and said he was going to go down to Costco and spend $1,000 on a year's supply of food that they have prepared already for him as a backup plan. Do you suggest everybody go to Costco and get their own survival kit?
I do suggest everybody makes their own survival kit. I think that they should do some research and studying first so that they know what items that their family will really use. Way back many years ago, there were some big pushes about year supply and, you know, food supplies and things like that. And it was found that some of the suggestions that were just blanket suggestions, they just didn't work for everyone. Everyone couldn't put in 200 pounds grain bags of, you know, bags of grain and how it worked out because they didn't have a grinder. And so, yes, I think everyone should have their preparedness kit, one for if they're going to be able to stay in the home and use their food supply there, and one for if they have to be able to move to a different location. And they would be filled with different types of things.
How long should a good amount of food be able to last? We've got a case of soup in our basement along with a case of bottled water. Just to be safe, although the bottled water is probably several months old by now and the plastic is probably leached into it. But what kind of things should people be keeping in their stockpile?
First, the national standard is 3 days of preparedness. But in Alaska, because of our remote location, they recommend at least 7 days of supplies for preparedness. And some of the things that people forget to think about is in a really, really stressed out situation, it's going to sound really weird, But a simple pack of cards to take your mind off of it once you're kind of settled in a comfortable place, but so that people don't panic and so that you can lighten the situation, is something that they do recommend goes into the pack. Also things like a flashlight, a way to strike, a way to light a fire, and then food sources that can be rotated. So use the types of things that you use at home in the thought for your preparation so that you don't have to go out and spend that $1,000 right now all at once, but instead of one case of soup when you're getting low on yours, get a second case of soup the next time that you supply and rotate it each time you need to so that you're little by little building your supplies.
I was just thinking I have that case of soup and not a can opener in sight.
And that's a good thing to remember.
So the workshop is happening this weekend, September 17th, from 9 o'clock until 4 o'clock. It's already sold out, but if you want to leave your name with someone, who should they call, and what number should they call?
And yes, and they're welcome to call me and have me put them on the standby list. My name is Michelle Brown. My phone number is 586-0371.
Irene, do you want to pass out any information?
She's main contact on this one.
Thanks to Irene Gallien and Michelle Brown for coming down and talking about disaster preparedness in the capital city.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Support comes from listeners like you and from the Juno Artist Gallery, a cooperative featuring the work of over 25 local artists and artisans. The Juno Artist Gallery is open year-round and daily during the summer, located downtown in the Senate Building.
Thanks to Sister Grace Elliott for providing that idea to do Mother's Nature Blues talking about disaster preparedness. Time is 2:44 and you are tuned in to KTUO News in Juno. Speaking of disasters, we just walked in Nancy DeCherney.
Oh, man. It was a disaster walking across the street.
I said the rain started reared its ugly head again.
Yeah, I see that the weather forecast is for sunny.
On Sunday.
On Sunday. And they don't say that unless they're pretty gosh darn sure. So I'm holding my breath until then.
It's all a practical joke from the people of the National Weather Service.
Anyway, nonetheless, we're going to have a fabulous couple of days here. I want to remind people that there's a scavenger hunt out and about looking for little silhouettes of Alfred Hitchcock. I think there are 39 of them, and the first person to find all of them gets 2 season passes or something exciting anyway. But even if you only find 15 of them, you still win something. So you should be out and about somewhere in the borough finding these little scavenger hunty things for the 39 steps. Let's see. 4 o'clock was registration for the Saturday thing, but it's all filled up for this week. But on Monday, you can register again for next Saturday's Saturday thing. It's an opportunity for kids to get together and tinker with stuff. Always a good plan. At 7 o'clock, Pam Bailey is speaking on the Palestinian Gandhi Project. This is brought to us by the Juneau People for Peace and the Veterans for Peace Chapter 100. She will be speaking at the UAS Egan Lecture Hall. This is free, and you can get more information by emailing richinjuneau@yahoo.com. It's time to get Cub Scouts registered. You can register your young son for Cub Scouts at Auk Bay Elementary School on Thursday, on Friday at Gastineau School, and next Monday at Mendenhall River, and Tuesday at Riverbend. So if your little guy is interested in joining Cub Scouts, now is the time. 790-4826. Nickelodeon's showing Beginners. Friday is FASD Awareness Day, which means that at restaurants citywide, if you're a pregnant woman, they will offer you a free non-alcoholic beverage. So go out and about on Friday. At the Ethel Lund Medical Center, there's lots of information about this whole thing. It's the noon concert, Kimball Organ Concert, of course. At 3:30, it is the Charter School Family Climbing Night at Zach Gordon Youth Center. Zach Gordon is offering family nights for each school throughout the month, I guess, or maybe the year. I'm not really certain. But you can call and get more information about it at 586-2635. Charter School is first on Friday at 3:30. It goes till 7. It's free. At 4 o'clock, it's the second Friday teen hip-hop class for folks ages 10 to 18. This is with Kim Andre at the Canvas downtown. It's a pay-as-you-can sort of deal. It's Oktoberfest at the Mount Roberts Tramway. They have German cuisine. They have oompa bands. They have prizes. They have contests for costumes and all sorts of stuff. You can get your tickets for this at the tram. You need to go there at 5 o'clock. I think they said they were going to be closed on Friday until 5. If you want more information about it, call 463-3412. It happens also on Saturday at 5, so you can get tickets for either or both days. We've got Beginners, and we've got Magic Trip Ken Kesey's Search for a Cool Place at the Goldtown Nickelodeon, one of them at 7 and one of them at 9:30. Saturday, it's the Saturday thing, as I mentioned, and do call the Economic Development Council if you want more information about that, or go on to their website. They have a big description there. And you were just talking about the disaster preparedness thing. At 10 o'clock, it's a wild berry walk with Pat Harris. It's put on by the Juneau Audubon Society. People are to meet at the Eagle Crest Lodge. This is a free event, but they encourage you to dress for the weather. It's going to be sunny, so Bermuda shorts, right?
Why not?
Why not? But then bring your bug dope. It's also at 10 o'clock.
Did you call me a dope?
Yes, I did. Songshine Workshop. Juneau Parkinson's Group has been meeting down at K2 Conference Room. This is a free event, and it's an opportunity to exercise your voices and lift them. So if you want more information about that, this is free. It's at 463-6425. Also at 10 o'clock, it's the second Saturday, and I believe this is the last second Saturday for the year, Farmers and Crafters Market, which is sponsored by the Homestead Mercantile out at the Airport Shopping Mall. By the way, they're looking for musicians. If you'd like to go out and busk, they would love to have you. Give Carol out there at the Homestead Mercantile a call. There'll be produce and arts and crafts and all sorts of fun out there. at 2 o'clock and also at 4 o'clock on Saturday. It is the festive tea and grand reopening of the Mustard Seed Gift Shop, the Church of Holy Trinity. The tickets are $15 apiece or $75 for a table of six, and you can get the tickets at Holy Trinity or at Hearthside Books. You can call 321-4715 to get a ticket or get information. So again, at 5 o'clock, the Oktoberfest on the tramway. 7:30 is Who's Your Diva? Now, this is sold out, and we do have an extensive wait list. We were hoping we would be able to get more people in. It doesn't look as though we're going to be able to do that. Really apologize for that, but encourage people to use this as a case in point that, for example, there is another event coming next Friday that you're going to want to see. Don't wait until the last minute to get your tickets. Go now. Get your tickets now.
What's all those divas with their inflated heads?
Is that what it is? They're taking up all that room. It's going to be a lovely event. It was a fabulous idea by the Juno Lyric Opera Company. And I'm sorry, we can only fit 200 and some odd people in that space. So there you have it. At 9 o'clock, it's Bill Brasky at the Alaskan and Latin Dance at Latinos. On the Sunday is going to be a sunny day. And it is Patriot Day. At 7 a.m., local firefighters and emergency response folks will be doing a memorial stair climb. They're going to go over to the federal building and climb as many staircases as the folks did 10 years ago. If you'd like to join that, you're welcome to come. It is a free event, and I don't have a contact information for it. So
we'll be talking to people tomorrow on a June afternoon about that.
Okay, so more information tomorrow. The Gold Town has its kids' matinee tomorrow at 2 o'clock. I think they're showing Red Balloon and White Mane. Also at 3 o'clock, it is Diary of a Wimpy Kid. It's the family movie afternoon over at the Douglas Library. This is for all ages. It's free, and they have snacks. How bad can that be, huh? It's a friendship concert at 3 o'clock. This is two pianists, Etsuko Kimura Pedersen and Paul Krejci, at the UAS Egan Lecture Hall. This is a free event with donations accepted to help with the rebuilding of a concert hall in Japan that was destroyed. It was Tohoku University's concert hall. So lovely music and an opportunity to reach out across the seas to our friends and neighbors. Also, there's folk dancing as usual. On Monday, the Toastmasters meet at the Federal Building. It is the registration for next Saturday's Saturday thing at the Juno Economic Development Council. Until the end of the month at 1 o'clock, they're doing free tours of the Ted Stevens NOAA facility. So if you're interested in seeing that, this is free, but you've got to, it's a first come, first serve. It's for ages 16 and up. Call 789-6050 for more information. It's daily, Monday through Friday, through September 30th.
And you can't just show up. You need to register for that because there's a limited amount of people.
Right. So give that again, it's 789-6050. There's a sewing class out at Raintree Quilting. Learn How to Use Your Machine is the name of that, and I believe it's at 6 o'clock. A writing workshop group starts at 6 o'clock at the downtown thing. Jennifer Hahn, she's written a book, Pacific Feast, A Cook's Guide to West Coast Foraging and Cuisine. That's at the Douglas Library. It's free, 586-0434 for more information on that.
I was able to see a copy of that book. It's a fabulous book, and there should be a great interview on Monday on a June afternoon as well.
Super. Tuesday, it's Lindy Swing Dance, Lindy Hop Lessons at the Canvas with Alicia Jones, 586-1750 for more information. $10 at the door. It's the usual stuff on Tuesday, by the way. Let's see, we're into Recovery Month. No Kidding Me 2 is the Recovery Month film at the Gold Town Nickelodeon on Wednesday at 6:30. And on Thursday is the deadline for getting your Catalyst Grant application into the Juno Arts and Humanities Council. It's also an opportunity to learn how to become an adoptive or foster parent out at the Mendenhall Mall Road, 790-4246. That's at noon that you can get information about that. We have a pretty full thing. And as I said, there's a concert next Friday night you don't want to miss. Ed Littlefield, his group includes Jason Marsalis, among the other group of people. It's going to be a wonderful event, and tickets are available now at Hearthside, Rainy Retreat, and The Jack, and online.
All right, Nancy DeCherney, thank you for coming by and talking about things that are going on in the community.
Thanks for having me.
Tune to KTUO News in Juneau, coming at you a little bit early because of President Obama's speech before a joint session of House and Senate happening in the next few minutes. We are tuned to KTUO in Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTUO also broadcasts on these translators. In the Valley and Ock Bay area, tune to K276 AF at 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM 88.1. K220BT serves Huna at 91.9. An excursion inland and icy straight here, KTOO on K210 AS 89.9. And in Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau on digital channel 871. We're also online at www.ktoo.org. Coming up tomorrow at 3 o'clock on a Juneau afternoon, Pat Moore will guest host. We'll also talk with divas Carrie Groven and Shona Strausser in preparation for this Saturday's Who's Your Diva event. Brian Long from Capital City Fire and Rescue will be here to talk about Sunday's stair climb. We'll also learn about Saturday's recovery walk. Madeline Lefebvre will be here with a rundown of the evening at Egan activities. That Writer's Almanac music and more tomorrow at 3 on a Juneau afternoon. The forecast for the tonight looks like rain, low temperatures around 51 degrees. Forecast for Friday, more rain with high temperatures around 659 degrees. Friday night, mostly cloudy skies with a chance of rain. Mostly cloudy skies expected on Saturday. And Saturday night, looks like partly cloudy skies, but on Sunday, sunny weather with high temperatures around 64 degrees. We have next session in the House and Senate, listening to President Barack Obama's address to the nation.